I'm Fresh, and you are now listening to The Breaks Podcast. These are highlights from our Saturday night hip-hop show on KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. My co-host Confucius Jones and I are native Austinites, and we love talking hip-hop. Texas hip-hop, hip-hop history, and what's going on right now. And just so you know, the opinions expressed in the podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the position of KUTX Austin.
We here to take over the airways.
It's been a week. Well, at least for me, it has. I don't know about you. You took a social media hiatus. How was that?
It was cool. Like, it was, it should have been longer. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine. He was like, bro, 4 days is not going to be enough to completely
cleanse
wane
your soul.
Yeah, but it wasn't so much to prove that I didn't need it. And I didn't really have too many times where I was like, oh, God, I got to see what's going on Twitter. I think it happened like twice. Also, with our group chat, keeps updated enough what goes on Twitter that so I don't
this
need
is true.
To be on there. But it was also just because, you know, being off work, my job is so hectic and tiring. I just wanted to really make sure mentally I didn't have, like, a whole lot of, like, gunk and junk and stuff. So I was like, yeah, I don't need it. It was cool.
I need to tell you one because I am addicted to social media.
You know, I was watching the 2000 show at CNN put out, and I got to the episode about social media. And I was having a conversation with my wife about, I'm old enough to remember, and you are too, before the time of social media. Mm-hmm. And now how so many people rely on it. For just a sense of belonging or a sense of, like, respect or whatever. So I'm just like, yeah, I don't want to be that person. I was telling her about a guy that we both know. I'm not going to say his name, obviously. That is, every time we see him, like, at shows or whatever, he's very quiet, very, you know, respectable. You know, but when you get on Twitter, he just rant and raves all day and will not shut up. I'm like, see what social media does? Like, I understand, you know, conveying your thoughts, but it's just too much. And I just didn't want to be that person. I'm like, you know, I want to be at some point in my life the person that doesn't use social media at all. So, unless it's like an official statement about something, like, oh, I don't agree with, but outside of that, no.
I get that. I've just realized I'm addicted, not to the point to where, like, I rely on it or I have to see what's going on, but, like, now working at home, I'm just sitting here, and when I'm finished doing work, I'm just like, now I don't have anything else to do. I've read this book, I've read that book. I watched this show. I watched that movie. Like, what else is there to do? So I just find myself continuously picking up my phone, checking Twitter, Instagram, and even Facebook because sometimes I get that bored.
Yeah, no, I get it. I don't think I'm bringing Facebook back. I still don't have that on my phone. But
I deleted that permanently off my phone. I no longer have the Facebook app on my phone, but I do get on it on the computer. And then I also realized, like, I post the little audiograms for the podcast. So it's like I'm never completely off of social media. But in that aspect, I'm only on there for work. I post it and then I get off.
Yeah. No, I just, you know. But it's cool. Social media is a very important proponent of today's society. I'm not going to be that person. It's like social media is destroying all of our minds. I'm not going to be that person. Like that 2000 said, they said the same thing about radio. They said the same thing about TV. So I'm not. Social media is not destroying anything. I just don't feel personally that I need it. But we are in an industry where we have to utilize it and use it. So, but yeah, I get it. It's all good.
So early this week, we got more to the story of Megan Thee Stallion's altercation with Tory Lanez and her being shot. And what she said was both of her feet. It was a whole bunch of stuff coming out. I think, like, it was reported that she might have stepped on glass, but then it was like, no, she was shot in her foot, and we were all thinking that it was just one foot. She confirmed that she was shot in both feet. She went live on Instagram. While on live, she, like, exclaimed most of the situation. She exclaimed that, you know, she didn't provoke the situation to be shot. Like, she didn't say anything to Tory. They weren't fighting. It wasn't any kind of physical altercation that would make him pull out a gun and shoot her. He just pulled out a gun and fired on her. And, You know, it got to a point where she got real emotional and was basically saying, imagine being 25 years old and you don't have either parent. Your dad is gone. Your mother has passed, and how her mother was her best friend, and she hasn't really reeled from the death of her mother. And then she starts saying, like, she was surrounding herself around all these people who she thought cared for or had her best interests at heart, and it turns out that they didn't. And now she's in this, she's had this altercation, and then people want to joke about it, and everything is funny. And it wasn't funny because, like, she really is traumatized from that whole situation. And she started crying, and I was like, man, yeah, you know what, everybody that, like, cracked a joke and it still wants to crack a joke after, at this point, yeah, y'all just like a POS. Like, because like, you see a woman crying on into her phone, exclaiming that, like, yo, I'm really traumatized by being shot in not one, but both of my feet. And that's not something that, like, I egged on or hyped situation up to make that happen. And it just happened. Like, y'all are just sick for cracking jokes about me. So that kind of was the gist of the whole live. And then people, of course, got on the internet. I saw people, like, quoting it and saying that, you know, she had to have said something to Tory to make him do that. Or, like, you know, she pulled out how short and how little he was in his size. And that just sent him off. But I was like, even still, if he got little man syndrome, they still don't call for you to pull out a gun and shoot a woman in her feet, bruh.
But the first time he'd been told he was short, like, what's,
I'm saying, like, when you are a guy and you're short, you get told that your whole life. You've been short your whole life. It ain't like he cotton heel on King of the Hill. He got his shin shot off. Like, so you couldn't control your anger enough or your emotions enough to not pull out the gun you had on you to shoot her in both her feet. And it was just, and she said when she was shot in her feet, she didn't have any, like, real damage. Like, no bones were broken from the shot, because, you know, your bone, majority of the bones in your body are in your feet and on your hands. Like, 50% of your bones in your body are in your feet and hands. And she was just like, nothing was broken. So people were trying to say it didn't make sense. How did she, could she get shot and not break any bones in her feet? And I was just like, see, now y'all just, y'all looking too much into it, and now y'all victim shaming, which goes to her post that she originally made about black women being protected.
So nobody outside of the people in the car knows what happened. I also did hear on that live, Megan's was didn't explicitly say that Tory shot her, but a friend that was with Megan said it wasn't me. So obviously it was Tory. Obviously it was Tory. So like I said, nobody knows what happened, and so it's still a lot of speculation. Jason Lee of Hollywood Unlocked said on whatever, I think he's Zoom or whatever, people are interviewing now when it comes to radio. And he said the story you heard, which I think we talked about last week, was that, you know, they were at Megan and Tory and her friend were at a party, a pool party. They ended up at Kylie's house. Megan was sloppy drunk. Her and Tory got into it. Kylie was going to let him stay over there, but she saw how drunk Megan was, like, nah, you got to go. So they all left. Megan and Tory got into it in the car. He pulled out a gun. Well, she was, you know, berating Tory in the car. He pulled out a gun and shot her in both her feet. I guess when Jason Lee said he wasn't trying to shoot on her feet, he was trying to scare her. And see, this is the problem I have with that narrative. I don't care if Megan was slapping him, calling him a munchkin from the Wizard of Oz, calling him everything but the child of God. There was no reason for that man to pull out a gun.
Like, that was your scare tactic, was to pull out a gun.
Like, there's nothing you can say to excuse that.
Now I don't believe Tory can fight.
Yeah, I'm saying.
If that's what you do when a woman is allegedly berating you, being mad, saying things mad aggressively to you, your reaction for her is to pull out a gun. I can only imagine you would do that if a man was doing it to you.
Exactly. And so, like, there's, like, when Jason Lee said, he's like, yeah, he pulled out the gun to scare him. Like, bro. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, he sounded like he was excusing him, but come on. Like, I don't, maybe, once again, I try to always approach things like, not everybody has the same moral code that I do. I was brought up the same way. But the way I was brought up, if I pull out a gun, I'm not trying to scare you. I'm about to shoot you. Like, there's no, like, oh, maybe this will make him stop. No, you're about to get shot. Like, this is me as a rattlesnake rattling my tail. You're about to get bit. So either you just let it go or I'll shoot you. And so this whole like, oh, Tory's just trying to scare her. No, I'm not buying that. Tory was probably just as drunk. And somewhere in his small Canadian mind, he thought, let me pull out this gun and shoot her and that'll make her stop. Like, there is no way out of this for Tory. Like, there's no way out of it. I do have a feeling that his team is doing their best to try to, like, wait out the storm and to prepare a statement and say, well, he was defending himself. Unless we find out that Megan walked in there with a whole gun of her own that we don't know about, there's no way. There's no way. Like, domestic violence is bad as it is when it involves just hands. A gun being involved, bro. Like, no.
And she was shot and she had surgery. So it was like
no. I've seen the Chris Brown comparisons, Chris Brown Rihanna comparisons. I'm like, yeah, Chris Brown and Rihanna was a horrible situation too. Chris Brown didn't shoot her. Like, they were both horrible situations, but Chris, like, and it said on top of that, Chris Brown went to jail for it. Tory looked like he might slide on this one.
Yeah, I think he was released on bail. He made bail.
Yeah, for that possession of that gun. Maybe he hasn't gone to the police yet.
Yeah, he has not been charged for the firing of the gun and shooting her in her feet.
And it's looking like Megan won't cooperate, which I get. You know, she's a hip-hop artist. She's not trying to get that stigma of old telling, but she better than me. I've
been filed charges.
And she's right. Like, the jokes aren't funny. And
50 Cent. You know, 50, that, well, go ahead.
No, yeah, I saw 50 apologize.
Yeah. People came at him for that as well, because I think he said something along the line, well, if I knew it was that serious, you know, then I wouldn't have made the jokes. And people was like, what do you mean? Weren't you shot 9 times? What do you mean?
What do you mean
it wasn't that serious? I'll play devil advocate. I think what he meant by that, not necessarily that the gunshots were that serious. I'm sure somebody that's been shot 9 times, no. Being shot twice is serious enough. I think what he meant was, a lot of us at the time when the story broke, we didn't know what to think. And a lot of us was just like, this was just a wild and crazy story. Like, this couldn't have happened. Like, this really happened? Like, what really happened? And I think that's what more so he meant was, like, this was something that for a lot of us or all of us had never seen happen. Like, we've never heard about a female artist being in a car with another male artist and he pulling out a gun and shooting her. So it just was a crazy story, and we couldn't, like, just gather, like, yo, is this real? Is this, like, this story real? What really? Because, like, when it was reported, it was just Tory got arrested for gun possession.
Yeah.
So I think we just couldn't believe that this, like, had really happened. Or if the story was true that he had shot her.
That's just, in my mind, regardless of the details of what led to it, there's nothing in my mind that can absolve him of what happened.
Oh, like, no, I don't, most definitely.
There's nothing. Like, I don't, like, once again, like I said, I don't care if she was beating on him, calling him everything but the child of God. Like, bro, you pull out a gun on a defenseless woman.
Most definitely. That's hard. Like you asked me last week, you asked the question last week, can he come?
Like, he could have just kicked you out the car. Like, she was that, get out the car. You got money, call an Uber.
Yeah, you couldn't, like, you couldn't have stopped and just say, hey, man, y'all got to get out. Yeah. Like, just get out, man. Like the question you asked last week, like, can he come back from this? I don't know, man. Like, I'm kind of changing my answer now. Like, I don't know. Like, it's going to take a lot to come back from you shooting a woman.
Well, we live in a country that's very forgiving. That's why, once again, cancel culture isn't real. Y'all talking about cancel culture. Look, it's since what, in a few weeks that has happened, people still ask for Tory songs. Granted, I don't play them because I tell people there's a lot of Megan fans here. I'm not going to get beat up by these Megan fans because you want to hear Tory. But, yeah, I mean, he'll have a career, but he's never going to reach the peaks that he has before that's over. Like, because I feel like Tory was on an uphill climb.
He definitely was. With
his career, uphill trajectory, I should say. Now that's everything that he's accomplished now, that's the most he'll ever do. He'll still put out music. He'll still do small shows here and there, but he'll never be able to be, like, on major artist records. He'll never be able to sell a bunch of records. Record labels right now are not going to touch him.
When the world opens back up, when he goes out on tour, I think his attendance size will shrink significantly. I don't think he'll be in the arenas that he's in. He'll probably be in theaters, like somewhere between the 1,500, the 1,000 to 2,500 crowd, somewhere around there. And, yeah, I don't think, like you said, that uphill climb he was on, I don't think he's going to be climbing back up there. I don't think he's going to reach half of where he was.
Deservedly so. He shouldn't have a career after this, honestly. But, like I said, we live in a country where, you know, people can do the most outrageous things possible and still be able to function.
Especially when you're famous.
Exactly. So that's why our political climate is the way it is. So, you know, people, and I hate to say it, but because it involves a black woman, the people are also very forgiving when it comes to abuse against black women.
This is true.
Now, if he had, like, shot, I don't know, Lil Baby, and people are like, well, I can't believe he'd do that. Lil Baby's my favorite, but a woman, yeah, they'll let it slide. They'll let it go. Like I said, R. Kelly was out here being a whole monster, and people still be playing music. Yeah, so
to this day.
Exactly. To this day.
To this day.
So, yeah, he'll still have a career, but it won't be. He'll never be as popular as he used to be. And a lot of art, and especially since a lot of artists really like Megan, they're not going to side with him.
Especially since a lot of his fan base were women.
Yeah, that's, once again, that's why they play. I'm like, hey, look, one, I'm not playing no dude that shot a woman. And two, Megan fans are here. You know how many Megan fans are inside of here? I'm not going to have them come here and cuss me out.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Before we started, I was watching Snoop Dogg's interview in the Breakfast Club. It was, you know, Snoop Dogg's interview is always interesting because Snoop Dogg has been around for so long. I didn't realize that Doggy Style came out 27 years ago, his first album.
I didn't either until you just said it, because I wasn't going to bother to do the math.
Well, he mentioned it on there, and that's why. But you think about, like, when we were younger in the 90s, 27 years ago was like the 70s. So, like, a lot of, like, you know, the Parliaments and the Isley Brothers and the Confunctions, all that was prevalent. But, you know, the only time we would hear it is if our parents played it. So it's interesting to see, like, a person like a Snoop Dogg who put out his first album 27 years ago still have fans now that are way younger than us. But anyway, I digress. So he touched on a lot of topics in the interview. He was saying, the main thing that stuck out to me was he said after he had left Death Row, Mac-10 offered him, I think, like $1 million to do a F Death Row album on Who Bangin' Records, which is Unpriority. And Snoop said, you know, at the time he was broke and destitute and was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to do it. And on the way to record the album, which apparently somebody on Twitter said exists.
Yeah, they said they bought it. And so I'm interested to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah, I know. But Snoop said he would pass by the offices of the studios of No Limit because they were under Priority too. And he said he recorded a song with Mystical. He said he even know Mystical. Mystical was like, oh, I like you. And Snoop was like, oh, I like your music too, you know, cuz. And Master P asked Snoop, how much you want for the song? And Snoop was like, I was broke, so I told him like 15. And I'm thinking like 1500. He said Master P wrote him a check for $35,000. He's like, whoa, wait a minute now. And then Master P sat him down and was like, hey, man, like, what are you working on? Like, what do you got going on? And Snoop was like, well, I'm finna do this, you know, F Death Row album. He said Master P told him bluntly, you want to be alive to see the album come out. Like, you don't want to put this out there in the energy out in the world. So, you know, like, you know, come over here and come up. Basically, he convinced him to come to No Limit. He told the story, which Snoop has told before, about he flew him to New Orleans. Snoop went down there with, like, his dad and Daz. And Master P drove him around this nice neighborhood, like, pick what house you want. Snoop was like, at that time, I didn't own anything. Everything was under Suge Knight's name, my cars and my house. So it was good to see, you know, another man tell me, like, hey, bro, you come over here to this side, I'm going to buy you a house under your name. And so that's the story of how he went over to No Limit, which he's told before, but not that much in depth. They talked about the verses. And Snoop was saying originally it was supposed to be Busta, but some things happened where they couldn't do it. So then Swiss recommended DMX, because of course he did. And also, one thing I'll say, and we can talk about it, he said that, because during the verses, and you mentioned this last episode, Snoop said that the reason he played Dre's verse and what was it, Nothing But a G Thing, is because he wrote it. And Charlamagne asked him, like, what is better? Like, somebody writing for you, you write your own stuff. And Snoop said, you know, if somebody writes it for me and it's better, then yeah, I'm gonna go with that. And he said, I never forget, he said, Drake gave me and DLC a beat. And for 4 days, we could not get anything. We could not write anything to it. We couldn't get anything going to it. So we told Dre, he said, Dre flew a dude from New York out to write the song. And that dude wrote the song in 30 minutes. And that song was still DRE. He said, it was Jay-Z.
Yeah.
So he was like, yeah, man. He said, you could tell, like, Jay-Z really was a fan of Drake because he had all his cadences. He knew when I should come in, when I should. He said, yeah, Jay just said it better than we could. He was like, yeah, he got it. So,
which is still mind-boggling. Not mind-boggling, but still is amazing that somebody as New York as Jay wrote, like, one of the quintessential West Coast records. Like,
I didn't know he wrote it in 30 minutes.
I think I had heard that before, but I think I had only heard it once, so I didn't really pay any mind.
Granted, if you've heard any story about Jay-Z and how he makes his music, that's not surprising. But yeah, Snoop said him and DLC were working on that song for 4 days and couldn't get anything, and Jay-Z flew in from New York and wrote it in 30 minutes.
It's the GOAT. He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
But he said, you know, Snoop was just saying how, like, you know, like, he basically talked a lot about his career. He said Eminem is not in his top 10. And he made a good argument for it. Like, you know, once again, Snoop is older, and we are too, so we remember a time before Eminem. So to say that he's not in your top 10 is not like a diss against hip-hop. It's like, hey, I just came up at a time where I remember other people who I think are better than him.
It was to the internet, though.
Yeah, whatever.
The internet thought that was just so blasphemous for Snoop Dogg to say that Eminem wasn't in his top 10. And I, of course, spoke to it and was like, oh, he's not in mine either. Like, it's
well, funny because, go ahead.
My whole thing is, I think, like, when certain people say that certain artists aren't in their top 10, like, are they supposed to be? Like, y'all do understand lists and top 10 and top 5, dead or alive, those are subjective. So, depending on who is putting the list together, it's going to look different. Like, yeah, you're going to meet some people where Tupac isn't in their top 5, dead or alive. Like, yeah, that's just possible. And, like, I just don't think Eminem, like, all praise and respect to him for his craft and his career and his success. But, like, no, he's not in my top 10. He's not in my top 5, my top 10. I don't even think he's in my top 15. But, like,
everybody Snoop named is in his top 10 wasn't, like, I'm pretty sure Eminem would kind of agree with that list. Like, Snoop was naming, like, Rakim, KRS, LL. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure Eminem would be like, yeah, no. Yeah. Well, like, Snoop was like, yeah, Blueface and, you know, and Waka. Like, he was saying, like, yo, like, I came up, you know, like, I was a huge Slick Rick fan, so I think Slick Rick is better than Eminem, which is fair. You know, once again, we came up in the South. You can't tell me anybody's better than Andre. You know,
man. Man.
So, and not, I mean, most of the industry would agree with that, but we're from the South, so I definitely agree with it. So it's a different, you know, like, it's a different feeling for it. But yeah, Snoop was like, hey, man, like, he said, I respect him. He's my brother. We were under the same family. But he said, when Eminem came out, he did the damn thing. But I'm in my top 10 now. Basically, his argument was, like, if when hip-hop that I can't live without, I can live without Eminem. I said, that's fair. And it's not like people are saying, like, Eminem sucks. Like, we know he doesn't suck. We're just saying that, you know, and I'm an Eminem fan, but he's not in my top 10 either. So, you know, but yeah, that was a really good interview with Snoop. He mentioned how Jada called him for the Red Table Talk after he went at Gayle. He said, Jada's very convincing. I can see how August get caught up. what else did he mention? Just that, how, you know, how much respect he had for the East Coast. He said Dre was more standoffish because Dre had to deal with more East Coast bias than Snoop did in the beginning. But Snoop was like, when I would go to shows, you know, we go places, I'd, like, move people out the way to go talk to East Coast. All like, hey, Slick Rick, I love your music. Or, you know, LL, I love your stuff. So, because Snoop was like, he was just such a fan of the culture. Which you could tell because Snoop was saying that, you know, if you look at his career and who he's worked with a lot of people. He said, I don't look at his competition. He's like, we're companions in this. Like, he said, if your pen game is better than mine, that's what's up. Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, I can't do this song because he's killing me on this. Like, no, it's good. You're good.
Well, I think the verses also show that too. Like I was saying on the show when we were talking about it after and recapping it, the love and admiration that he showed DMX, like during the entire time that they were there, like you could tell, like, yeah, I think they all got swept up in the whole East Coast West Coast thing, but I don't think they ever like believed that like East Coast artists just strictly and purely hated them or like they purely hated East Coast artists. Like you could tell that he has a great love for the art form and the culture that is hip hop just by the admiration that he was showing DMX and how he was saying like, I'm a fan of you. Like when you drop this, like we was me and my guys, we was, you know, we was out there and we was getting with it. We couldn't, like, when I would come to a show, I couldn't wait to see you perform this.
Yeah. He said that he was like, he said for 2 years, DMX ran the music industry. He said, I had to even take a back seat to him. I said, yeah, everybody did. DMX was the artist, especially in hip hop. He was the artist. Like, nobody was touching DMX for 2 years. He was the top of his game. But yeah, like I said, just with Snoop Dogg, Charlamagne said, I heard on the low that Jay-Z's a sneak crip. Snoop said, you had a little lingo in there. I be hearing, you know, Jay-Z be throwing a little crip lingo in there.
They loked out in Brooklyn.
Like I said, it was a really good interview. Like Snoop is, I forget how old he is. Not like old like a person, but just like how long he's been doing it. And Charlamagne asked him, like, you know, at this point in your career, in your life, like, is there, it's staying home just like basically just is better. He's like, yeah, seems like I've done everything. Like, I don't mind staying at home. So I might go out and do some things with my homies, but outside of that, like, what else can I do? So, yeah.
I think he's done a reggae album. He's done a gospel album. He's rapped. He dabbled in R&B with the Sensual Eruption. Well, censor it for radio.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, man, you know, credit to Snoop. Yeah, I'm a Snoop fan. Definitely it is Snoop interesting fan. To see, like, when I was watching the 90s, too, the special about the 90s, and they got to music, and they mentioned the Snoop Dogg. It's like, it's just crazy to, when you're mentioning music of the 90s and, you know, what that landscape, Snoop is mentioned, and then you fast forward to 2020, he's still being talked about.
Yeah, like, so, he's somebody you have to mention. He's like Vince Carter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
like
just
Vince Carter. Like,
if he wasn't at the forefront, he was there somewhere in capacity.
Like, you somebody you have to mention when you're talking about rap, and like, you just gotta mention Snoop.
One thing, like, you know, the Austin music scene right now, you know, in terms of like hip hop and R&B, is growing and getting a lot of notoriety. Jake Lloyd's Artist of the Month, shout out to Jake Lloyd for July. And I always compare it to Atlanta in the early 90s in a sense that everybody knows each other. There is this sense of camaraderie. And when the city finally does gets the respect it deserves and blows up, it's going to be a lot of collaborations happening and just like, you know, 3 or 4 degrees of separation that can make people like, wow, you know, that's, you know, this person, you know, that person. Man, me and you tell stories about people we know around here and like, oh, wow, I didn't know you knew that person. But going back to Atlanta, because of Atlanta being so close-knit, the stigma of the city is that everybody in Atlanta gets along, and it's been like that for years. Even though they have small disagreements, that seems to be more of the exception to the rule than the actual rule. Mm-hmm. I would argue, because once again, we're human beings and every city has their issues, Atlanta artists do have a lot of issues with each other. They just do a better job of hiding it. With that being said, it seems to be, and we're talking about this now because one of my biggest regrets with the breaks was that when the Remy and Nicki thing looked like it was about to happen, I argued you up and down that it was not going to happen. And you were like, yeah, it is. I had to be in super wrong about that one. Remy went on the warpath against Nicki. But so with that being said, we're going to talk about something that looks like it's brewing and looks like it's going this direction. It seems like, okay, before I say what's happening. So Migos are signed to QC. They are currently suing the lawyer for QC, saying that there was misrepresentation of funds, and there's money not being given to them because their lawyer is the same as their labels. And if you know anything about that, that's a conflict of interest because, of course, the lawyer's going to look out for the label and not the individual artist. So there started being murmurs that Migos also have a grievance or an issue with their fellow label mate, Lil Baby. They feel like QC is putting too much attention into him and not the Migos anymore. Granted, I first heard that, I'm like, eh, nah, that ain't. I mean, that could be possible, but I doubt that's why they sued their lawyer. They were like, oh, Lil Baby's doing better than us. But once again, just paying attention to the internet, I started seeing little murmurs. A video allegedly came out of Lil Baby and his crew jumping on Offset and stripping him naked. It's hard to really see who's getting beat up in the video because it's like from a faraway distance. Whoever filmed it was like way on the other side of the parking lot, and you can't see between the cars. You can see Lil Baby clearly telling whoever is his people like, hey, yo, chill out, stop. But apparently they just completely ignored him and were just beating up on this guy and throwing his clothes all in the air. Some people say that was Offset. They also point out the fact that if you really pay attention to Lil Baby's, you know, discography, there's no Migos feature on there. Although Offset was on Baby's Hard album. He was on Realest In It. That's really the only Migos feature. Takeoff never been on a song with Lil Baby. Quavo's never been on a song with Lil Baby. Recently, there was an interview with Peter Rosenberg and the Migos. They were just talking about all their upcoming projects, Culture 3. And Rosenberg brought up Lil Baby's song, which we just played, The Bigger Picture by Lil Baby, and say, you know, Lil Baby's like really doing it. He's really doing it like, he's like one of the top artists out here. How do y'all feel about that? And the Migos stared blankly at the camera until Quavo finally broke the tension and silenced it, for sure. That's all he said. And they immediately moved on from there. There's also rumor that the song Racks Too Skinny that the Migos put out recently is a diss towards Lil Baby. And if you listen to the words, it kind of sounds like they don't. It's nothing like specific to Lil Baby, but it's a whole lot of threats being thrown back and forth about, you're not being real, you're not really gang, we never really trusted you. And it's like, that could be to anybody, but it's the timing of it's very strange. Like, you put it out like right when Lil Baby's album comes out, and it's just very. And also, I'll say this and we can start, you know, discussing it back and forth. QC's label, you know, head CEO P, when he put out his statement, basically his statement from what I read about the Migos suing the lawyer, basically read like, you know, I try to help people out. I thought we were family, but we're not anymore. So there might be, where there's smoke, there might be fire with this one.
I can definitely see that. According to Atlanta Twitter, because for some reason I follow quite a few people from the city of Atlanta. About the video where Offset is allegedly getting jumped. It turns out that it was Offset, but Lil Baby was not there. And Lil Baby apparently came out and spoke out against that and I guess allegedly squashed whatever issue was had between Offset and Baby's people, 4PF. 4PF, because I don't want to sound that country on here. So apparently, like, Baby stepped in and handled that. But I have heard, been hearing rumblings that the Migos aren't happy that QC is putting more stock into Baby, which I thought was just, like, smart business. And I think it's something that we talked about, like, early on, that, like, Lil Baby just, like, you know, he waited his turn. He laid in wait, and he just waited till his number was pulled, and, you know, when it was called, he was ready to jump in. He was ready to jump in the game and perform, and that's what he'd been doing. Like, so I just thought, like, that's how QC was working, was, like, he hot right now. Why not push him? Why not push out of that? Y'all not really putting out music, whether as a group or individually, so why are we going to just take all our money and be pumping it into you guys? Culture 3's not ready, so why pump money into something that's not ready? And Baby is working. He putting out album after album. He just got his first number one album. So, like, yeah, we putting this where the money's going. But I can definitely see them being, like, feeling a way, though.
There's, and I think we talked about this on air. There's an argument, too, that Migos stock has been slowly declining over the last couple of years. Leroy Cohen, when asked about, you know, the partnership with 300 and QC and the Migos, said that Culture 1 was the last album that they had on 300 before they left. He said that album did better than Culture 2, didn't it? And it did, numbers wise.
It was number one. It went number one, and then when Culture 2 came out, I don't think it did half of what Culture did.
Yeah, Culture was their breakout album. And I think we talked about how Migos, once they kind of, you know, blew up and crossed over, they started kind of catering more to that side. Which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, I'm not gonna be like they sold out, because they didn't. But Migos, the lane that Lil Baby currently occupies in terms of being like a street rapper and putting out great music consistently, Migos had that lane, but they kind of jumped out of it to kind of, you know, they started doing videos and, like, looking like Tron, and they were doing, like, karate, and, you know, like, Lil Baby's videos still feel like early Migos stuff. And so I feel like Migos jumped out of that lane, which, once again, you do grow as an artist, and the budget for the video gets bigger, and you do what you want to do, and Quavo clearly wants to direct and be all intricate, and so Little Baby was like, hey, I mean, he didn't say do it intentionally, but he was like, you know, this lane that y'all now have moved on from, I'm in, at QC at least. And so if it does come out that they do feel a way about QC focusing on him, I'd be extremely disappointed in them. I also think that this, I don't know, once again, I don't know these people. I do think that maybe Little Baby might have more history in the streets than the Migos. Because people have to remember, Migos are still very young. They came on when they were like 16, 17 years old. So, just like 50 Cent once said about Lil Wayne, how much street stuff were you really doing at that age? Like, I mean, you could be out in the streets, but what is your street history? And even Migos at one point in time admitted, when Lil Baby was first coming out, that, yeah, Lil Baby used to be around us all the time, like, just gambling, like, and just in the streets like that. And Lil Baby, once again, is like, yo, look at my record, I've been in the streets. So Lil Baby might also have a little bit more respect in the streets in Atlanta than Migos, only because they're like, yeah, we know Lil Baby. Like,
I can see that. He from, and, like,
because he grew up with Pete. Him and Pete know each other.
And I think it makes a difference of where they're from within the Atlanta metro area. Like, the Migos are from Gwinnett County. Like, they up there with K Camp and what's the guy named Uber Everywhere? Made in Tokyo.
Made Tokyo, yeah.
Yeah, like, all of them are from north of Atlanta and Gwinnett County, and, like, from the people that I know in Atlanta, like, that's not really, I ain't gonna say the hardest place, but, like, not really a place that people were like really care to talk about is Gwinnett County.
Yeah.
And Lil Baby's from East Atlanta. Like he's from over there with Gucci and Future from. So I think like, yeah, I think that kind of matters. Like that Lil Baby is actually from the city and in the city.
Yeah, and I think everybody, because everybody in any type of business relationship, personal relationship, there's always going to be an issue that arises, big or small. And I think, unfortunately, this has been talked about so many times when it comes to music. That's why I say music, not just rappers, but artists will have a small issue. But once success and fame kicks in, the entourage is kicking in, and it's harder to, you know, squash something that could probably be, you know, squashed easily with a conversation. So it might have just been, you know, that they're, since they're both huge artists and probably have huge entourages, they had a small issue and the entourages got involved. And of course, Offset getting beat up does not help. And it's just now that it might be getting to a point where they can't communicate like they would have maybe 2 or 3 years ago when Lil Baby was, you know, the odd man out and the small guy in the clique. And like I said, it's unfortunate if it goes that way. I know QC is probably like, just, if I was QC, I'd be pissed the hell off. That's like top, that's like all the black hippie fighting. Like, really? Like, we're about to blow up and this is what y'all start doing? But once again, Migos are younger, you know, and they, you have to imagine, they built QC. There's no QC without Migos.
For the most part.
So they might feel a way. They're like, yo, like, Lil Baby exists because of the work we put in and the sacrifices we made. You know, because Migos, when they first come out, they was getting a lot of trouble. They was fighting and going to jail. And there was a lot going on. And so, you know, they probably feel like, yo, like, we should, you know, it, like, he should be more, especially if, like, Offset got beat up. I wonder if that did happen. What was P's conversation like? Yo, like, how did P react to it? Because if he didn't react a certain way, our coach,
him or Coach K,
yeah, if they didn't react the way Migos would have liked, that might have caused another rift. But once again, I'm hoping this isn't true because that's not fair. Like,
it isn't. It isn't.
Y'all would hope, but then again, it might come down to, because so one time, it was a while ago, I read an article from Toomp, DJ Toomp, and he said that when they started Grand Hustle, he was told that he'd have a piece of it. And then when everything came down, he didn't have a piece of it. So he felt the way. I wonder if the Migos, the two were feeling like, man, we built this thing. And when it's all said and done, we don't actually own anything in QC. And down there.
That could be it. And that word family. That word family always gets them. Every rap, at least. Every time that word family is thrown around, it never ends well. Because I think people are really expecting everybody there to really be family and act as a family. But like you said, money gets into it, success comes into play, entourages come into play. Everybody got their own clique with inside of this de facto family, and it's just like money changes a lot.
Yeah, Death Row was a family too till they weren't. So if we find out later on that QC is running a janky label, I'm gonna be so hurt because I really respect those guys. Like, really, you know, that would hurt. That would hurt. I feel like they were one of the preeminent labels of the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. So that
most definitely
that would suck. But we'll see. Hopefully this doesn't turn into, you know, a situation like we liked with the Nicki and Remy thing where it just gets super bad and, you know, can't be fixed. But even though I don't care if Nicki and Remy ever get along.
I definitely don't. It was entertaining to me.
But
I hate it didn't last as long as I thought it would.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for our first segment of the night, Unpopular Opinion with Mr. Fresh himself.
All right, this one is going to be short and simple and not as exciting as weeks past Unpopular Opinions. Jack Harlow, the new white rapper sensation that is blazing the internet, is overrated. That is my unpopular opinion. I don't get it. Maybe it's just because I just simply don't get it or haven't got into him. The What's Happening song is cool, but it's not as good as everybody is ranting and raving about. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And it's not a whole thing about, like, I don't like white rappers, because if you know me, you know I love Mac Miller and Asher Roth. But I'm just not sold on him. And he kind of reminds me of Asher Roth, somebody that the internet is just swearing by. But I just don't know if he's going to make it to that next level, like an Eminem or Mac Miller did. Because that was...
Before you say that, Asher Roth is famous for having Justin Bieber as his little companion when he's coming out. You see who's bigger.
And that's the thing. Like, Asher Roth came out blazing with I Love College and his Gangsta Grills with DJ Drama. But then, like, after that, he kind of, like, gave it up to go smoke peyote in the mountains of Montana or something like that. Like, so, like, I don't know if Jack Harlow can sustain it. I've seen everybody saying that, like, he's this guy, he's going to be here for a while. I don't know. And granted, we didn't think that about Mac Miller either when he first came out. But maybe we'll see with Jack Harlow. I think he's overrated. That's my unpopular opinion. And now it is time for our second segment of the night, a time where we gain a little bit more wisdom than you have in your wisdom teeth. Here it is. Confucius says with Confucius Jones. And I thought of that on the fly, and it made no sense.
If y'all could see my face, like, what? I guess. So, you know, this week what Confucius says is part two of why I hate fresh. But no, no, it's not about that. When I work, sometimes I work 3 days and I'm off 4 days. This is outside the radio. If anybody doesn't already know, I have more than one job. Love radio. Still need another job to pay the bills. But also I DJ. So, you know, that's what I do for a living. Which, funny thing, a friend of mine not too long ago asked me to DJ their like birthday or something for free. They're like, oh, we know each other. We were in elementary school. I blocked them. Like, no, bro, we're not doing that. But, you know, throughout, you know, in the industry, I can't be specific about what industry I'm in because we are a family show. But the industry I do work in, I've come across all types of people, especially just DJing. You know, when you're in an environment that is like heavily party, it's mostly partying, you wouldn't think you would get to see people's like true selves or their, you know, their souls or whatever. And you really don't. You have to really dig to understand them. For me, I had to learn as I got older that not everybody has the same moral compass I do. What I don't think is right, somebody else might think is completely right. I say that to say, in the environment I work in, and this is everybody, managers, you know, the people that make up the club, dancers, all that, you know, we all have our reasons for being there. Job, money, whatever. But one thing I've learned about a lot of people in just life in general is that sometimes when somebody does something that you don't agree with, it's human nature for us to take it extremely personal. Like, this person is doing this to hurt me. This person is doing this because they don't like me. What we don't sometimes realize is a lot of people do things for survival. I say that to say this. Certain people are raised differently than we might have been raised. So they react to situations, not in the sense of just trying to be like harmful or to be intentionally, you know, evil. It's because that's just the way they react to it to survive. Now imagine this. Imagine a person growing up without both their parents. And this is nobody in specific. I'm just making some off the wall example. Imagine somebody growing up without both their parents, right? They had to learn to love themselves, or they're still learning to love themselves throughout a process of growing up and just interactions with people. What if those interactions aren't all good interactions? So when you do finally meet this person and you try to be, you know, you try to be friendly or try to be good, they lash out at you. Now, granted, once again, human nature says, well, they're doing this because, you know, they're just mean and they're just a bad person. What if them reacting to you that way is, once again, they're trying to survive? Because to them, genuine, you know, doing something genuine for them makes them feel a way. It feels like once they get let down. Once again, you coming up without any parents, you know what I'm saying? You might, the way you view, you know, how people love is different. Once again, this is nobody specific. This is just general example. So one thing, and I say this, that's my Confucius says, that I've learned is that a lot of people react because emotionally they're trying to survive. They're trying to navigate a world that has turned their back on them. And the reason why I brought up the party scene is because a lot of people I work with, they're just trying to survive. And that's most people at 9-to-5s. Most of us work jobs because we're just trying to survive. We're not there because we have a passion for what we're doing. Granted, everybody that's on, you know, me and Fresh, we're on radio. We love radio. I love DJing. But I've worked a lot of jobs where I was just trying to survive. I hated those jobs. I don't want to be there. Like, but hey, I'm just trying to get by. There's been personal relationships I've had where I was just trying to survive. It's like, I'm just trying to get by. This person's cool. You know, they bring me food. I dated a girl one time who brought me a box of Oreos. I didn't like her, but she used to bring me boxes of Oreos. I like Oreos. So sometimes in life, you know, what I'm trying to say is what my Confucius says, is that we always have to understand that sometimes people aren't making decisions because they just want to hurt us. They're making decisions because they're just trying to do the best they can with what is given them in life. And so instead of always trying to take things personally, just try to look past it and understand, well, why is this person doing this instead of why are they doing it to me? And that is my Confucius series. The Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/The Breaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown.